saying goodbye to Little Big Planet 3.
A second dose of Deliverance.
Hello and welcome to Triangle Square, the PlayStation podcast. And I said, squeal like a piggy boy. There goes your second dose of Deliverance already there. If you haven't watched the movie Deliverance, don't start now.
watch Cannibal your own Holocaust barrel. Instead.
Yeah, do one of those two. Anyway, welcome to Triangle Square, the PlayStation podcast. I'm your host, Brett Beck. And alongside me, as always, is one Mr. Chris Figgs. Chris, let the people know how you're doing today.
Just dandy, Brett. How are you?
I'm doing well. So we're going to get into something that I'm going to kind of let you, I'm going to make sure I spearhead this back into you and make sure that you are comfortable with any of what we talk about. But we keep hinting about a little bit of a project we've been working on, which we just spent the last hour doing before we finally just started to record. So we'll get into that today, and maybe the jig will be a little bit up. If you were worried that it was porn, B-Raj already figured it out.
But step, bro, I'm stuck behind the PS5. I was trying to change the Ethernet port and I couldn't do it.
This is a podcast where we look at gaming and the games industry through the eyes of being PlayStation fans. But of course, we play and or praise or chastise the competition as we see fit. So hopefully that is up your alley, and if you think something as good is happening across the aisle, then we're ready to talk about it. But we're also going to talk about Kingdom Come Deliverance 2 coming back around to give us that other dose of Deliverance, some uncensored versions in all regions for a game that by all means you would have thought would have gotten the censorship hammer, some news for some upcoming beloved sequel to a beloved indie, some bad news for a Little Big Planet 3, unfortunately, and a little bit more talk about Amazon's excellent Fallout series. But before we do that, we're going to start the show off the way we always do, where I ask Chris what he's been up to and what he's been playing, and before we talk about what I've been up to and playing, so that we can give each other maybe the next game we should be playing, like I have done from Chris this particular week, or maybe steer you away from something that you thought you'd like, but after hearing us talk about it, it doesn't seem up your alley. So if we can save you some money, great. If we can make you spend some money on something you didn't even know you wanted, even better. Chris.
Oh, yeah.
It looks like we both have one game list. Now, I don't believe that for 1 second from you, but I believe that you decided to only want to talk about this one game. So why don't you go ahead and let the people know what you've been playing?
So the main thing I've been playing is Dave the Diver on PS5. I have discussed this game ad nauseum, multiple episodes now, but I am the furthest I've ever been. I have more thoughts. Those thoughts being, it's getting kind of slow. my favorite part of the game is the cooking part, like the running the restaurant part. And that part is the shortest part of the game, which is fine because the crux is most of that, is the getting your ingredients around the cooking. But I've had points where even today I was playing a little earlier where I just skipped fishing. Like, it's putting me behind a little bit. But I'm like, I have enough ingredients. I don't want to go down there and deal with some of the stuff that I know is going to take me a while. It's still fun. I'm still going to play it. I'll probably get the platinum. I'm close. Not close, but close enough. I was. Yeah, close enough. Like 25% of the trophies down. But yeah, there's just like they just introduced this farming mechanic, which is cool, and I get it. But the second I saw it, I was just like, oh, no. It was like that one, because the problem is Dave doesn't move very fast.
Like when you're actually controlling him. So, yeah. Okay, give me a second, because I did download this game when I downloaded the other game that I've actually been playing all week, and I've just not actually been playing this one, haven't started it up yet. But I kind of want to get a general idea. So, like, there's a game called like Diner Dash or whatever, or Overcooked, games like that. When you're doing the cooking, how much are you actually controlling Dave and doing the cooking? Is it kind of like an actual full on mini game where you're moving about the kitchen? And
no, so you're not cooking.
Is it just a menu thing where you're putting, essentially
so you
telling
make the
game?
Menu. Yeah. So basically in that screen, you can check on your, so you set your menus, and in that screen, you know, okay, I have 36 slabs of whitetail shark meat. So you can choose to either sell those 36 shark sushis, or you can enhance your dish. And then that gets, when you make your menu, you can open up for business. When you first start, you have to serve tea. You have to bring the food to the customer. You have to clean
the tables.
So it's
like Diner Dash. Okay, it's like Diner Dash. I've never played Diner Dash. Okay, give me a second. It's been a long time since I've played Diner Dash. I don't even remember what the hell it was on. But basically, you just move around this crowded cafeteria. You bring them the food. Mm-hmm. You pick up after, wash the tables to make sure the whole business is operating smoothly so that people could come in and can continue it.
Yeah, exactly.
The only difference here is that sometimes you've got to go actually out and do the fishing part.
Right.
To get your ingredients.
And that it's, I like the fishing part. But again, it's gotten to a point where there's a lot of stuff underwater and Dave is slow. And to move Dave faster, you have to have these upgrades or, you know, different things you can find. Like there's like these undersea jets. And I'm not sitting here saying that Dave the Diver is bad. I'm sitting here saying that most of my week has been spent either writing or playing Dave the Diver. So I think I've been a little bit like when I'm here on Dave the Diver and I want to get to the kitchen stuff, but I also want to work on what I'm working on. It's been a little bit frustrating, but I can tell you that when I saw the farm thing, I just turned the game off today. And I'm looking forward to playing it after this podcast. So it's not one of these games going to drop and never talk about again.
Sure.
But it was one of those things where I went, I just don't want to have to manage one more thing after doing, like, I don't want to spoil it. So there's stuff in the sea that you start doing that's really cool, but I wanted to get to this one thing. So it might just be a momentary little frustrating thing, but in the end, Dave the Diver is great. I'm just putting out that one opinion that there's a couple of things there that I wish were a little bit faster. That's really it.
Yeah, I feel you.
But
that's the complicated part for that game, because like, have you ever seen like some games look boring?
Mm.
But are very fun, and some games look fun, and then as you're playing them, you're like, this is kind of boring. Like, my go-to example of a game that I always think looks fun, but it just gets so boring so quick is fucking, and it's been a long time, so base this off the fact that I'm thinking of the PS2 versions of this game, let that be known. Dynasty Warriors is a game that I used to think looked so fun when I was a kid, and then I finally borrowed it from a friend, and I played the endurance mode I played the normal mode and got incredibly bored. Then I played the endurance mode where you just kill as much as you can before you get killed, and I did that for about 2 hours and had a great time then, but it was just after about that 2 hours, I'm like, I don't think I ever want to play Dynasty Warriors in my life again, and I have such a bad taste in my mouth because of that, for that game in particular. But the flip side of that is I think the game I've been playing, if we're good to go ahead and kind of scooch over to that, I finally started playing a game that Chris basically yelled at me enough to play, and I finally started playing whenever I got through with the games that were I was committed to, and that is Balatro. And it's for anyone who may not remember or didn't hear that episode, it's a game that by all means follows the rules of poker in terms of what cards you're playing with. You have a deck. So you're dealing with a playing deck, four of them to be, well, not one actually. And then, so you have four of every card type in your normal version of the deck. You play through, you get so many cards, and you have to play five card hands, or up to five card hands. But the hands are all based off poker rules. But you're not playing against somebody. You're not placing a bet. You're earning coins and playing against the blind that you're just trying to hit and or exceed. And when you're doing that, you have all these different cards like jokers and tarot cards and planet cards that you can do to like level up the hand so that when you play certain hands, you get a better immediate coin value and a bigger multiplier so that you have an easier time hitting that blind per hand. And it's a roguelite so that every time that you fail a run, you restart from the beginning. But as you play and do well enough, you'll unlock new things for each new playthrough, like new decks, new jokers, new vouchers that you can buy on any given run so you can play what's happening. And I think that game looks boring if you look at it without thinking much and you're not really getting into the mindset of it and you just see someone playing it, you're like, this is stupid. Why would anybody play this? But if you spend 2 seconds actually playing it, it is so fucking engaging in a way that this other game that's constantly asking me to do shit is just not. Like, Dynasty Warriors is not engaging to me at all. And yet this thing that I can play as fast or as slow as I want to is so engaging because I'm having to make sure I don't mess up. And then I plan out everything and I set up my hands and I don't waste all my discards by trying to set up one hand when it's not going to allow me to be able to beat the rest of the game with the hands I do have to play. So, but what I was getting at with that is I've been really iffy on where I stood with Dave the Diver because I couldn't tell from looking at it alone how fun I thought it would be. Because I think the fact that it kind of straddles these two worlds just makes it a little complicated to understand outside looking in.
I think the game is obviously fun. I think the problem I've had, like I was saying, is, and I said it to you, where it's like I've been doing one thing so much that I need a distraction. And Dave the Diver has fallen victim to that, and the fact that it's the game I've been playing, because I just sit at my desk with my laptop open and play games, and then I, you know, write what I'm thinking and move forward. So Dave the Diver has been occupying that time because it's a very easy game to pause. You know, it's a very easy game to go for. And I think I think it's a game that I would say, like, you can have your binge sessions all you want, but it's best played in a couple hour sessions, and then, okay, you know what? I'm going to do a day. I'm going to do 2 days. I'm going to get this mission done, because what I'm finding is it being the only game I've really had time for this week, it's getting a little monotonous to do. Hey, I'm going to, okay, yep, we're going diving. Oh, I'm all the way down in the sea. Nope, now I need my UV flashlight so I can get even for, you know what I mean? Like, there's that, those small stuff where it's like, hey, why don't you just give me like a taxi to the depths, you know, or something like that. So it's a little bit quicker. But again, for me, it was more the, we keep introducing mechanics that are just one more thing you have to do before you get to the part where you see all your numbers go up. And as we've talked about, I am a number go up kind of guy. So I like
that. Well, that's what I think speaks to Bellatro so well, is that it's exactly what I liked about Inscription so much, where it's like, you remember whenever I was playing Inscription and I found that stupid broken thing where I just could infinitely tick a card up?
Yes.
Yeah. And I sent you a screenshot where I had ticked the card's value up so much before I actually even played whatever I was doing, that the value of the card was exceeding far past the edge of the actual card frame, because I had gotten it to such a big number that they didn't design for it to account for that, but the game allows you to keep going. And so I remember telling Chris, like, I found an infinite loop that I'm just seeing how far the game will let me push it. And it was ridiculous. And I was, this is the same thing happens here. I got into Bellatro. I started playing it Thursday during lunch. And the whole idea was, okay, it's a game I can quickly hop into. Because the other game I did play a little bit this week was Dragon's Dogma 2. But that's a game that's really hard, as I spoke on last week, to come home and try and play for 30 to 45 minutes without feeling like I didn't really do much. Because I'm not far enough in the game to where I fully understand it well. So I try to, like, I'm not even kidding. The only time I played the game this week, the only thing I did was run around city, find some chests, find a store to finally get rid of my rag armor and put on some real armor, and then go through all my people and try and upgrade as much shit as I could. And then I was done because it was lunchtime and I had to go. And I felt like all I did was min-max my character for 30 minutes.
Sounds about right.
And it was like, yeah, was it a bad time? No, but at the same time, is it the type of content that probably makes all the other people who are in love with Dragon's Dogma love it? No. And so the difference for Bellatro is that Bellatro is a perfect game to come home, play for 30, 45 minutes, see how far you can get in a run. And if you're doing great, it's a really easy game since you kind of play it at your own speed to just turn off, come home, reopen from rest mode, and keep going if you want to. And so Balatro has been excellent. And what's funny is that one of the great things about roguelites to me is that all of the best roguelites are games, like I did this with Dead Cells, I did it with Hades, to where even though they're made to be played in short bursts, would you consider Dave the Diver to be a roguelite? It's really not. It's just it's got some of the same short burst gameplay elements, but it's not really a roguelite.
Well, it depends on what you mean. You go into the, honestly, the more I think about it, it's a roguelite.
Okay, so can you fail the business and it shut down and you have to restart from day one?
No.
Okay. That's what I would have thought Dave the Diver being a roguelite would be.
No, every time you go, the fishing is a roguelite.
Yeah, it's like it's got rogue elements in the fishing part.
Yeah, because you start from the top, you have to go all the way down, you have to set your equipment, you start with bad equipment, as you find stuff in the deep blue, there you upgrade your equipment, the upgrades continue through. It's very much a roguelite in that sense. There's just other elements to it.
It's funny that you say that. Because a game that I also think kind of follows that ideology is Sundered from Thunder Lotus. Mm-hmm. And it's a game where it's a roguelite in the sense that every time you die, the map resets. And you have to kind of find your way through this gauntlet again. But you have all of your powers, anything that you've really unlocked, you keep going. So it's not really a roguelite, but it has so much roguelite elements that you kind of view it as one. But either way, going back to Balatro and what's been so great about it is just that feeling of like, I get home, I can hop into a run, see how well I can do. And I start to do that same thing I did with Inscription, where I'm just finding ways to play around with the jokers that I have and the upgrades that you can give to your main deck card so that you can create crazy combos. And I was sending Chris, like, I'd made a hand that was like 70,000 coins. Yeah. And this was like my second day playing the game. And Chris was, it's funny because, of course, the way that I am with games, here I am. I played Balatro. The whole point was just to play it so I had something quick to get out of. But all games that are really good roguelites do this thing where they're made to be played in short bursts, and yet they're so addictive that you play short burst after short burst after short burst, and you're just playing this loop, and suddenly you've been playing the game for 4 hours, and you're like, how the fuck did I get here? Yeah. And that's the thing about Balatro is, like, Thursday after everyone left from card night, I immediately sat down and played like 2 more hours of Balatro. So day one, I got like 3 hours, 3.5 hours of Balatro in. And by day two, I'm messaging Chris with broken combos that I'd found. And Chris was, I beat the game, or I beat one run of the antes on the second day. And Chris was like, before I even happened, I told him I was on ante seven, and he was like, or I'd beat Anti 7, and he's like, you're going to beat the game before I ever even got anywhere. And then I was like, two minutes later, I was like, yeah, I already did. So that's the way I end up playing those games, but that's just because what I was going to get is the min-maxing I was doing in Dragon's Dogma felt pointless because I didn't even get to do anything with it, whereas min-maxing in Balatro feels awesome because it's like, your moments between blinds when you're at the store is like so important to the game because the store is your prep phase. How am I going to set up this next blind with what I can buy or spend or sell or set up in this, in the store? And then you keep going. And that's why I think it's really funny. The game clearly wants you to sometimes skip a blind to get a benefit, but I'm always like, that means I don't get to go to the store.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've hardly ever skipped a blind because I don't ever feel like the benefits are really that good. But maybe
that's my problem because I always do. Not always, but like if it's like, oh, the shop has a polychrome joker, I'm like, yeah, I'm getting that joker every time, no matter what.
Well, it's funny. I found that I've had decent luck just wanting to go through and get specific jokers, like that capital J, lowercase j joker that every time you reroll the shop, it gives +2 multiplier to itself. I've had that same joker multiple times. First time I ever got it, it was a holographic. So it was multi, +10 mult. It was chips. It was foil. So it's +50 chips and then whatever the multiplier was. And what I found is it's so easy to just build up, or it's relatively easy to build up with other jokers the ability to get more money so that every round you're getting $30, $35, $40, and then you're immediately selling, re-rolling as much as you can so that you can build up the multiplier on that card. And I've had that same Joker three different times at a plus 100, plus 116 multiplier.
I've never gotten
And what's that great, though. Yeah, if you do it, there's a bull card I found too that's kind of the inverse of one I saw that you did, where there's one Joker that gives you plus two coins for every card left in your deck. So as you get deeper in your hands and you have less cards, it gives you less coins.
Yeah.
But I found the inverse of that. It's a bull and it was foil. So it gave me 50 coins immediately. And then it gave me two coins for every dollar I had. But I had the two of the moon set up. And then I had a voucher that lets you get more interest, double interest per round. So I was able to get $20 per round in interest only. Uh-huh. And then the bull had it to where you get two coins per dollar you have. So I have some cards where I could, like, you know, I had the one where you can discard a card and it'll give you money if it meets the ranks that it asked you to discard. So mid-game, I could be discarding cards to get more money so that I get more coins from the bull. And then the multiplier from my reroll multiplier Joker would just set up a crazy turn of events. And that's the first time I ever beat the game, was that combo right there.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah,
and when I beat the game, I beat the game at lunch on the second difficulty, Red State, where you don't get any money reward for beating the small blind.
Really?
From that difficulty. And now I'm doing green difficulty, green stake, where it applies Red State's thing as well. So I don't get any money from the first blind, and the blinds scale much quicker. So you're at what normally would be like a blind six small blind is what you're getting in like blind four.
Okay. Wow.
So stuff like that's coming together. And I just love that game because I sat there for like a couple hours of the night. And my wife was just like, why would you do that? And I had to explain to her. And she was like, this game's kind of interesting to watch. I was like, I know, but only once you start getting into it.
Yeah. Once you realize. Yeah, man, that's crazy. I've
like, this wouldn't be a good game to show on GameStop TVs while someone's checking out, because they're going to be like, why would anybody ever play that? But you know.
But once you're sitting and watching for a while, I get that. I need to just sit down and give it a shot. Like I was saying, I've been focused on other things in the past week or so.
Well, Chris, here's the moment where we can go ahead and knock this question out if you want.
Yeah, let's
talk about we do it. Have a question from Jehudi MD that pretty much pertains to the other thing you've been doing this week besides playing Dave the Diver and asking me at unfortunately inopportune times to play games with you.
I pushed this week.
You have pushed so much this week. And it has not been the week to do so. So I apologize for that, Chris. But yes, over on our Discord, which you can get to in the description below, whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on podcast services, you can hop in there. And where we do question collection, we had Jehudi MD, longtime listener. He said, recording early, I see, because we are recording a day early. He says, you keep mentioning a project that you and Chris are working on. Any sneak peek, games related or outside of that? Chris, this is ultimately your project that you brought me very severely close in on. And I have a 49% stake
in the card game. Yeah. No, I'm just
kidding. Anyway, so yeah, go ahead and give your side and then I'll kind of fill in whatever you don't get to.
No, so I mean, I just said it, right? Like, we've been building out a physical card game. I don't know that we've landed on a name necessarily, but the lore is around what I've been working on kind of on my own this week, which is a book I've been writing in the fantasy genre. So we've taken stuff from there and stuff that I don't know how it would even work into it and put it into a physical card game that is, I think, takes a lot of inspiration from video games, I would say. That was my inspiration around it, not including Marvel Snap, talking more about old school Final Fantasy or Chrono Trigger.
It's almost like circular things anyway, because honestly, video games took inspiration from old school board and card games. And now we're just kind of circling back around and being like, oh, this was kind of cool. We're going to, you know, inspired by this video game to do something that's not a video game.
Yeah, exactly. So the big project between me and Brett is the card game. The big project for me and kind of Brett is my book. And we'll see. Maybe one day we'll be a moguls of some big internet conglomerate, or 15 people will read my fantasy book that doesn't go anywhere and play this game that doesn't go anywhere. Who knows? That's kind of the stage we're at, but that is the project. I don't know. Brett, what do you think?
Yeah, I think just to give a little bit more, it's something we've been working on for about 4 months, three, 4 months. Mm-hmm.
Something close to that, yeah.
Yeah, and so it's kind of just something that we do in the background. And it, you know, and if you've ever been part of a creative process, I think anyone could know that any creative process is very time consuming, but it's even more time consuming when it's something that's at the scale of trying to figure out a mechanical foundation for something. Now, I'm very happy to say that I feel pretty confident that we are rapidly approaching and have gotten to where we have most of the mechanical foundation that we're going to work on. That's kind of where you split hairs with each other, depending on what you kind of envision something as and what the other envisions it as. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of designing of cards. There's a lot of designing of the actual way the cards look, how they play into the lore of what Chris is writing, and trying to give room for what Chris is writing to stand on its own, but for the card game to be able to reference it and hopefully minimize how often they fight each other, while realizing that a card game is still a card game and it's got to work as a card game, even if it means that it fights the book a little bit. So yeah, you can't see them off to the side, but we have prototype custom game mats. There's a box with prototype custom cards that have actually been professionally printed that we're playtesting with. And I am very hopeful for the game. So far, playtesting has been very good, and a very small group of friends that we have that have been playtesting it. I'm looking forward to getting Chris a set of cards so him and I can playtest it, and we can bring a little bit of our ideas a little bit closer together, because by nature of Chris being further away and what this is, it's often when him and I are talking, it's a battle of concepts. Whereas whenever I'm talking with my friends who are physically playing a version of the game with me, it's us actually talking about something in action. So yeah, it's been really fun, but it's like, since Chris and I work and we work very different schedules, we spend a lot of the day kind of back and forthing in this, private Discord channel that we have, different ideas for both the book and the card games. And as we both have time, kind of coming together and checking in on what people think about what cards. And so almost every day that we go to record, it's one of the only days Chris and I have had much time to physically talk in an environment where we can see each other and hear each other. And we can really hash out some of the things that we either disagree strongly on or that we need more understanding on. And it's been quite the process, but it's been very fun.
It has.
And so far, this is where I want Chris to be able to play test. I think once he can play test, I think he'll get an even more sense of reward than he currently has from hearing all the different playtest feedback that we've been getting from the group of people who have been playtesting it. There's nothing like looking at cards that Chris and I have designed and being able to tell Chris about a crazy combo that I pulled off with a bunch of cards that we didn't intend to play together. That's the magic.
There's a lot of I'm sure you may get this less because I'm not telling you, but you'll bring up cards that I've designed and be like, this card was really sick. And I was like, fuck yeah, that's my baby. That's my little Robin.
And I get that, right? Whenever I come up with something and it turns out to work really well, you have that sense of pride where it's like, cool, my idea works and it's really good.
Yeah. And that's the interesting part with it, right? Where you have the card game difference. And then for me, knowing Robin, who's one of my main characters, is a good card, is like, oh, that's cool. Because I know I have we've talked about it before, where I have a different sense of the characters than you because I'm writing them and you're making cards. Sure. So there's that little sense of oh, I'm glad she's good. But
it does breed into this kind of interesting diametric design that we're going into, where I come up with a character like Vesper kind of off the cuff. Mm-hmm. And then you just kind of really like this random character that I came up with just as a tie through to a card or to a series of cards. And then you kind of just go, cool, I'm going to put him in the book. And I like that because it's like, I was thinking about the character in a way different way, because I'm really just thinking about, I'm thinking small chunks of lore, like that are through lines of cards. So I'm thinking like one to two sentences of lore that you can kind of loosely tie together if you squint and turn your head a specific way. And you're over here kind of going, well, that's a cool idea, and this is a cool idea, and here's how I'm going to drastically change it or flesh it out. Yeah. And that's been fun. So to answer your question, Jehudi, there's your sneak peek. I would say it is games related, but because Chris and I, this is something else I've never really talked about a whole lot on the show, years and years and years ago in high school, and actually in junior high, every school system is different. Junior high for our area is 7th and 8th grade, and then high school is 8, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12. Was doing in 7th and 8th for those 2 years, we had East Lab classes, and Game Maker, which is a common game editing tool, is something I have experience in making games in because I started messing around with it as my class project for the year. The teacher ended up buying my license for Game Maker for me to keep going. And then I remember in eighth grade, as I was continuing to work on it and work on a game, I would get called out of class to go to East Lab to help another student who had decided to make it his project for that year and get into it. And so she would call me so I could help problem solve things he was dealing with on gaming side, and trying to figure out how to make it work in the program. So it was great because I had a group of friends and I was making the game while they were kind of just giving little input. And then, one of my friends, she was just our play tester. So I'd finish the game or I'd finish something in the game and then I'd do, you know, play test and it'd bring up a playable version of the game and she'd run through and see what she could do. And we all got A's that year just from me wanting to screw around making a video game. So Game Maker, a lot of people don't realize this, is actually behind a lot of games that people really enjoy. If I'm not mistaken, Game Maker is behind Hotline Miami 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. Game Maker is behind Death's Gambit, one of my all-time favorite games. So there's a lot of indie games that use Game Maker Studio, and I think that's pretty sick that I do have a little pocket of knowledge around that. But I haven't kept up with it. I am very computer savvy, but with that in mind, Chris and I can't make a video game.
Yeah,
we don't have the funds. Yeah. To pay someone else to do it. We don't have the know-how right now. We don't have the time to have the know-how. So what Chris and I can do is put our brains together and make something that I can just print on paper that's relatively budget-friendly. And hopefully it does get somewhere. And if it doesn't, then that's just is what it is.
Two interesting backstory facts. First heard here first. That was the worst sentence I've ever said in my life. Hear it here. You're first, a writer? Though. Yeah. This idea actually started because I was joking with Brett that we should design a PlayStation card game and try and sell it to Sony. So that's how that idea happened. And then I don't know if anyone noticed, but my icon on Discord has been my main character for probably 6 months now.
Yeah. I really love that's how a lot of creative processes come together. Because like whenever we were doing, whenever Casey and I were doing Obsidian, and we still kind of are, for anybody who listened to Obsidian and really liked it, we have three songs, two of which are done, have album art and single art, and I just need to get off my ass and put them out.
Do it.
But it's funny, that whole thing started from me and Casey just being like, we should start hanging out on Fridays and just fucking around with music.
That's cool.
And then suddenly one day we had like a really great idea that kind of had a very specific sound. And I was like, it'd be really sick if we just built off of this. And suddenly every Friday for like 7 months, we were getting together and coming up. And it was the same thing. It's kind of what I wish, Chris, that you would be here or closer around, because the closest I get to it is when we get the hour before recording where we can really kind of be talking to each other and feel each other's energy. Because... what I really liked about Casey being here is almost every song that had like almost every song had a really fucking cool moment in it, and it was almost always an accident. Like it was something that we were kind of screwing around with and or like diddling around while we were doing something, and then suddenly it was like, oh, that sounded cool, go back. And then you just kind of keep going through. There's a part where I remember we were recording vocals and I moved a take because I just wanted him to do another take to see what it would sound like. So I moved the one out of the way for a second and I forgot to mute it. And he did his take. And then suddenly it repeated the same line, like a split, you know, with the perfect gap. I didn't even mean to do it. And it was exactly where it needed to be. And that is still in the final song. And nice. I love shit like that because it's just like, oh, that's cool. You just ended up, it's like you stumble your way into a bunch of cool shit. And I think we've done that a lot in this card game. And I think you've done that a lot in your book. So it'll just be interesting to one day kind of be able to push this out and get more opinions on it. But right now it's a little closer to the chest from an actual design standpoint, because I think we have a lot of unique and interesting ideas. And I don't want people to look at them and be inspired to go off and make something that they might get out of the door quicker than we can.
Facts.
So with that said, that's where we are right now. Name is to be determined, but we do have a work in progress name that we're working off of.
Do you want to see if it ends up landing, or do we keep the name to ourselves?
Nah, keep it close to the chest.
Fair enough. I like that.
All right, there you have it. Hope that's a good answer for you, Jehudi. Thank you for asking and showing some interest in what we've been working on. We appreciate that. And B Raj, in case you didn't realize, it's not actually porn.
Again.
But, Chris, hear me out.
There could be someday.
Hear me out, Chris.
I'm hearing.
You could write. You could write smut to accompany our card game.
I've done that. I can write smut.
Just throwing out, I got a couple of friends who are really into smut, and I think both of them would be very excited to read our smut that coincides with our card game that they otherwise would have no interest in.
I don't know if I ever told you, but there was a point of time where I genuinely considered writing smut under like a fake name with like an anime avatar on Twitter and just seeing how much money I could make. Maybe I do that. Nobody knows.
Maybe you do, Chris.
It is an anonymous account.
I mean, bro, all I'm saying is throw a few dollars your homeboy's way. I mean, you know. Hey, and if you guys want to throw a few dollars to us, go to patreon.com/Nartech and give as little as a dollar per month to support the show. And hey, who knows? Maybe you're also somehow, some way supporting our side project that we've been working on. But there we are. So all I have to say to that, B-Raj, is that the picture you posted, fake news. Fake news. Yeah.
I will say, though, I did not have
sex with that woman.
That was really good. That was really good. I liked that a lot.
All right. So that means we got to keep going on with the rest of what we got going here. And guess what, guys? Still a busy week. Still doing things. So no community state. It'll come back for $350. So we're going to go ahead and bounce into the news. But before we do so, Chris, is there anything else you wanted to talk about or get off your chest beforehand?
No, not really. I think I'm good. Taylor Swift's album is bad. I'm pretty mad about that. All right.
I need to run and get my phone charger so I can be charging my phone while we're doing this, because apparently it's done. What's going on? Because everyone loves T-Swift, and then suddenly I feel like a big portion of her of people who I've known that have loved her are kind of just like, yeah, this new album's not it. But I remember this big like speech that she gave about how this is like her best album and her seminal work and how she just felt a need to write. And I've seen so many people be like, eh.
Yeah, so, I remember.
Fill the population in.
My favorite response to that is like, you felt the need to write, but I didn't want to hear it. I don't know. It's not the worst thing I've ever heard. She's definitely made worse albums, but I was left disappointed by the cringe. There's a very large cringe element. Like, I don't know. It was cute when she was like a young country singer up and coming, but it's like, you're a billionaire. Why are you talking about this stuff like you're in high school? And listen, I'm a Taylor Swift fan. I don't care. But like, make it less cringe. Like, it's just a little cringe. And like, I got turned off because she like advertised this Post Malone feature, and I like Post Malone. I like Taylor Swift. That's really dope. And then Post Malone does these like vocals like three layers back in the song, and I'm like, what the fuck was the point of that? What are we talking about here? You let Future have a verse three albums ago, and you didn't even give Post Malone anything but harmonized vocals? Fuck off. But I have it on vinyl, so. Dude, it was to the point where I'm like, is he in this song? And then you tune into the background. No, he's there. disappointing. But again,
well, you know, vinyl, it, so. In stark contrast to their T-Swift talk, we did have a we had a little short, you know, stint of talking about metal music last week when we were talking about reactions, reaction videos from the question from Ryan. And one of our longtime listeners and patrons, Mr. No Fate, popped up to say that he'd like to hear us talk a little bit more about metal. And I think it's pretty interesting seeing how all this comes together, because one thing a lot of people don't know about Post Malone is at one point in the time he was going to be a metal vocalist. And right. He actually, yeah, I got to remember the band. It's a ongoing band right now. And whenever he was young, he tried out for it's Crown the Empire, which is like a metalcore band. And he auditioned to be, I think maybe guitarist. I can't remember. It was something like that. And I thought that was just really interesting because it was like, it wasn't metal vocalist. He was going to be a guitar player. But what a wild world we live in which that comes together. But Chris, right before we started, I remember talking about a band that I think you should try out because I think it might be right up your alley, because they kind of blend heavier technical metal moments in with some kind of poppy sensation or, you know, moments and or pop, you know, mentality. It's a band called Volumes. Okay. And they have been around for quite a long time. But they have this song that I love to death, but every single time it comes on, I always call it a country song, because in reality, it is a country song. It's a song called Bend.
Okay.
And I just want you to listen to it. Doesn't have to be right now, but I want you to listen to it. And I want you to tell me that you can't imagine that with just a country twang on the voice and that it wouldn't just sell. The whole song, the chorus for sure, but the whole song works as a country song. And I so desperately want someone to come in. It's a banger, by the way. Okay. I want someone to come in and do a cover of this song with like a steel guitar and just a real deep, like Garth Brooks style accent, you know, and just hit it and see if you can sell the same song to people who love country, who would otherwise listen to this song and be like, I don't like all that heavy guitar shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
So there's your inspiration. That's, if you don't know of Volumes, check them out. Their newer stuff did get a little bit more pop infused, but I still think there's plenty of tech stuff for it. But if you want to go a little bit older, there's an incredible song from them that's called Erased, and it's off their album from like 2013 or so, maybe 2014. It is incredible. It's a sick song. And as opposed to a lot of their songs, which kind of let the pop-infused moments come into the choruses, this song is way different in that most of the verses are very clean vocals, and when it pops into the chorus, it's just screamed refrain, and it punches, it kicks. It's awesome. It's a great song.
It's a banger. Oh, yeah, this is a country song.
oh, so you listened to it. Yeah. My favorite part is always be like, this time it's too late. You can just put a little bit of a country flair on it, and you've already got it. It's there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a country song.
Definitely when it hits the over and over again, I'm like, there it goes. And he, of course, he's singing this with no accent twang. At all. No this twang. Accent's coming from me on purpose because I just think it would make a killer country chorus.
Yeah, this is a Tim McGraw song, dude. It's great.
It's so good. And last band I'll throw out there, we were going to go see Bad Omens, which I wouldn't be surprised if you've heard of them because they've gotten pretty big this year. I don't really have much interest in them. I think they're fine, but we were supposed to go see them in October and the show got canceled. As soon as we got to Dallas. So we ended up spending the weekend in Dallas. Well, they rebooked a show, but since it was Bad Omens tour, the band that was with them that I wanted to see, Era, E-R-R-A, which are also an incredible band, they did not get booked back into the show. So up until this past week, I thought we were just going to go see Bad Omens, and I didn't really care, but my wife wants to go see them, and my friend's wife wants to go see them, so it's like, whatever. But they announced a band that I deeply love, that way smaller, Invent Anime. Intervals. Invent, Anime.
Oh,
yeah. Are on the bill now, and I love them. And my wife was like, hey, this band called Invent Animate just got added to the bill. And she showed me an album cover that has the White Wolf. And I said, yeah, baby, look by the TV. And I have a snow globe that is that album cover. That's where it's sick. The album cover is a flat, you know, a wolf walking through the snow. And they just turned that into a snow globe and the bottom is snow. And it says Invent Animate. And it has the, and I'm like, isn't that fucking, she's like, oh my God. I'm like, yeah.
That's awesome.
So I'm fucking hyped. I love whenever, like, I'm willing to see Bad Omens. They're fine. But I'm usually, at any given concert, I'm usually there to and rooting for the band that hardly anyone knows. People know Era. Era's not anything new. But Invent Animate's a much smaller band, and that's who I was hyped for. So nice. That's who I'm still hyped for. But I'm torn, Chris, because even though they're not booked on the same show, Era is playing in Dallas the same weekend, the night after we see Bad Omens. And I think I'm getting too old to do two concerts in a row.
No, do it. Keep that youthful energy, bro. If 40 is the new 30, 30 is the new 20, you should do it.
I should try it, right? Yeah. Well, we'll see. If it was a seated concert, you bet your ass I'd be there. Because there's nothing like seeing the small band, right? We went to go see Spirit Box, and you know, what was the other band? I can't even think. We talked about it last week.
Intervals.
Intervals is the band I love. After the Burial. Of course, everyone's there for those two, and here I am, fucking stoked that Intervals is playing, and I'm like, let's go.
I started listening to Gojira recently.
Oh, Gojira, yeah, they're awesome.
Yeah, they're dope. I like their stuff.
All right. Well, there goes your metal moment of the show. Apparently, that's a new segment.
I like that. The new segment, the metal moment.
Preceded by
the Swifty Corner. No.
And for some reason, by if you've...
the Tortured Poets Society.
There you have it.
Love that. So cringe.
Also, just because shameless plug, if you've not listened to Absideon and you want to listen to it, it's on all streaming services. Absideon. I'm terrible at naming things. Don't ask me why I named something that's so fucking difficult to remember and keep up with and spell. But there you have it. If you want to go check out the EP that me and my buddy put out, there's six songs that I think are all bangers, and I'd love to hear your opinions on them. But moving on, talking about games again, let's get going. We have some news. As has been the case, news is not crazy this week. The first thing we're going to start with is pretty tame, but it does bring with it some interesting implications, because I think a lot of people would have landed on thinking this game would have been censored in some capacity. But since they're working so close with Sony, that might be why not. So Shift Up, the developer behind the announced Stellar Blade, which is coming out at the end of this month, is going to be out and completely uncensored in all regions. So they confirmed today that every single region will have the same version of the game on disc. And if you've not seen the game in action, you shouldn't be surprised to think that maybe there was going to be some censoring on some versions of it.
Mm-hmm. I would have thought so.
My long-running joke that Sony had, this is so long and who knows how much Sony's changed internally, but my long-running joke was that they had to use a glint of light to cover the ass crack of the girl in Devil May Cry 5 whenever Dante's carrying her.
Yeah.
And yet I got to watch Abby get uncomfortably railed from a, like, phone in front of you shot in The Last of Us Part 2.
POV. And
I just know that someone at Sony was like, yeah, but ours is art.
Yeah.
I just fucking know it. I deep in my bones know that someone had enough pompous attitude to be like, yeah, but Devil May Cry 5, him carrying this almost killed woman with no clothes on and after this crazy moment of battle, that's not art.
That was gratuitous.
But this right here, this look of pain in Abby's eyes as you watch this man thrust her from behind, this is art.
What a game.
Honestly, both. I do like The Last of Us Part 2, but Devil May Cry 5 is also a fucking banger of a title. Yeah, I know you were chastising The Last of Us 2, by the way. But
it's a fine game.
Best gameplay of 2022.
I
God damn, it's been 4 years.
Yeah, I know. It's Jesus. Time is a flat circle. It's depressing.
So there goes that. But yeah, you know, Sony has long been this kind of company that's become synonymous with censorship because of plenty of the games, Senran Kagura and all these different games being censored on PlayStation, and yet Nintendo, the family-friendly console that won't even let Roblox be on their system, is like, sure, you can have your tits and ass and bathing suits over here. So This is surprising, but I do think that there's been some signs that Sony has slacked a little bit on their heavy censorship. And I also think Sony's willing to make exceptions for games that are partnered with them. And this game has gotten a lot of positive buzz. So what do you take from this, Chris? Do you think that this is just a flash in the pan moment for Sony or what?
It's one of those things where I'd be curious to see what happens in the future, because it would seem a little hypocritical from them to censor anything else after this. I'm not sitting here saying like this is a porn game, but if you're not going to censor Stellar Blade, then like you're not going to censor, you really shouldn't be censoring anything, you know, especially not ass cracks.
Well said.
I can see an argument for face cutting, maybe. I guess I can't see the argument, but devil's advocate works there more than it does here, you know.
I actually forgot about that game.
Yeah, Martha's Dead, I believe it was. No? Yes.
Yeah. Martha's Dead.
And you know the worst, the sad part, though? That game probably isn't very good. Like, I haven't heard a word about it other than that, but I desperately want to play it.
Just because controversy.
It's in my head because of that. So they did him a favor.
The fact that you remember it to this day, despite the fact that you haven't played it?
Yeah, exactly. It's the same with, like, Abandoned, right? Like, I still think about Abandoned. So like it must have been Kojima and the game got canceled. Like, what else could that have been? Unless that was like long-term advertising for, could you imagine? See, I keep saying every time we talk about Abandoned, I start with could you imagine? But could you imagine if when he shows the first trailer for that new spy game he's making, and it just opens with Hassan Karaman going, "You thought we abandoned the idea? You thought we abandoned? Well, we did. It's called, I don't know, Insight now, right? What's that? What is it called? Insight? Insipid? Something like that?
No, it's something with a P, isn't it?
It's a made-up word.
Fizant? Something like that?
Fizant, yes. Yeah, Fizant.
Fizant, yeah.
Yeah. That would be the funniest thing they could ever possibly do, is bring out Hassan Karaman to be like, "Y'all motherfuckers thought."
What would be so funny at this point is if Abandoned wasn't anything in relation to that. At this point, I would just go to Hassan Karaman and be like, can I just give you $5,000, $10,000, $25,000 for the rights to Abandon and for you to do a cameo video where we make it look like this entire time this was a build-up for Fossen?
That'd be great. Man, I hope one day Jason Schreier tells the story of Abandoned. I really would like to know what the hell that was.
Dude, I still wonder how many people actually stuck around for that fucking... So anyone who... I'm sure most people heard the... We ended up doing a dramatic reading of the leaked script for Abandoned. But we did it at the beginning of the show, and we gave it like full-on audio treatment with like audio cues and hearing things and little sound effects and whatnot. And we gave different voices to different characters. And it was fun. But in the same episode, if you listen past the end of the outro for about 5 seconds... After the outro music ends, the exact same dramatic reading starts, but the entire thing is with Donald, Goofy, and Mickey.
Do you remember what episode
I think
is?
It's just Goofy and Mickey, but I think there's like a one Donald line where we just were like, or whatever. I do not remember what episode this was, but it's probably titled something Abandoned. I want to know how many of you actually listened to the fucking end, and if anyone heard that. I don't even care if anyone heard it. My plea for a long time was that if that game got made and moved forward, that they would put that in as a hidden audio file that you can find in the game. And I was going to petition for that to be in the game. I was going to do like a change.org thing and have everybody sign my petition. You know, that or threaten Hassan Karaman somehow.
That was my my favorite thing was when we did Midweek Matinee. I'm sure you remember. I did the editing for Midweek, and I would always just start recording in the middle of our conversations. And then if you listen to episodes of Midweek after the credits, is like probably 10 minutes of just random audio that we of us just having a conversation. It's pretty fun. There was some good stuff in there.
Man, The league is so stupid, and yet it's so hard not to just want to laugh about it because it is. It's quite funny to sit there and read this piece of paper and be like, how the fuck did someone lead to this? And I remember there was like the zero cell, and then it sounded like someone trying to write Metal Gear Solid who didn't have enough, like who wasn't deft enough to handle it.
Yeah.
And I remember it was like, in the dramatic reading, we were like, zero cell, huh? And I kind of gave it like a David Hayter Snake voice. But then whenever we did the other thing, I think I did it like goofy, like, look, zero sale, huh?
Yes, that's exactly what you did. That I've listened to it because I remember it was great.
Yeah, it's so stupid, and the grammar was terrible on it, but there was something that was like, perfectly engineered by AI computer simulations in real time. It's one of the stupidest things I've ever done, and yet, haha, I love it. There you have it. So
I'm trying to look up the script again. What a goddamn classic that thing was.
I just tried looking it up and couldn't find it. So do what you will with that information, but it is recorded in perpetuity in our episode. Which episode remains to be seen, but that's okay. Continuing on, the next piece of news we have here, Warhorse Studios has announced Kingdom Come Deliverance 2 set to release later this year for the PlayStation 5. The sequel promises to be a more ambitious project than its predecessor, enhancing the medieval European setting and gameplay that fans loved about the original game. Now, this is exciting for plenty of people. I actually never played Kingdom Come Deliverance because no shade at all to this game. Its whole shtick is about being obtuse and having to do everything the way that you would kind of expect to do it if you were running through a simulation of this time period. That's that game's whole shtick. I think that's cool. I applaud them for doing so and sticking to their guns on it. And I also applaud them because they fought a lot of backlash about racial diversity in the game. Fought a lot of backlash about ease of use of the game and how it wasn't friendly to people with different disabilities and whatnot. And I think across the board, the fact that this game became as big as it did and did as well as it did speaks to two things. A, an ability to just really be like, we made what we wanted to make and we're sticking to it. And B, what Chris just talked about and the power of controversy. Because I do think Kingdom Come actually got more popular because of the fact that it was considered controversial.
Without a doubt. Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's cool. Maybe Kingdom Come Deliverance 2 will do just as well. And, you know, sometimes controversy actually points you in the direction of a great game. That's just the reality of it sometimes. So.
Yeah. I downloaded it again recently. I've thought about going back.
Well, there you have it. Next piece of news. Another significant announcement was the release date for Darkest Dungeon 2, set for July 15th, 2024, for both PS5 and PS4. The game will also feature a new DLC with discounts available for PS Plus members at launch. So this is day one DLC. We'll see how that goes and bears for some people, because some people do not like that. But I think we're at a point in the industry where day one DLC, as long as it doesn't obviously feel like something that could have been included in the game, which, I mean, let me take you back there for a second. Because Chris, do you remember at the height of the, and I can kind of understand it. We're not there now because that's just not quite how it works. But do you remember disc locked content versus downloadable content?
I do, yeah. I remember that.
I think Mass Effect 3 was one of the games that had something like that.
Mass Effect 3, I think, is probably the most egregious example of this, yeah. Because there's a DLC character that if you play the game without that character, the game makes less sense. So it's very clearly a character that should have been there and they put as DLC. And
from what I understand, that character was on the disc, but he was only in the game if you paid to unlock that disc content.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. That's pretty wild, man. That was a weird time for gaming in general, because that was back when Sony and a bunch of other publishers were toying with the idea of online passes, where if you bought a game used, you had to spend $10 to buy a new online pass.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if you could get away with that now. I wonder if that was one of those things that was too early. Not to be that guy, but I'm very curious.
I think you're right, but the reality is that sometimes things come too early and they don't do well and they should have, and that's unfortunate for the industry. And then sometimes things come too early and they don't work out and people fight back against them. And even though they may work in the industry now and people may be more willing to do it, publishers are so scared from the response the first time around that they're just kind of like, we'll figure it another way. Oh, you're muted, Chris. Arguably, they already figured that out by just making games that you never quit playing.
Yeah. What I was saying when I was gone was, I wonder if this had worked, if we would have seen a less of a need for microtransactions and that would have been curbed a little bit. That's my only curiosity, right? It's a monkey's paw thing. No online passes, $20 skins for Fortnite. Yeah, you know? I'm sure it's not that one-to-one, but it's just a curiosity.
Well, my curiosity, and look, I understand the hate about it, but I also actually understood what the publishers were saying. Like, we don't see any money from a secondhand market. So the one thing that we can do for games that blow up from an online standpoint is get you to pay us so that you can play that online component. So we're at least making $10. Right. That's as much as a lot of people hated it. That's one of the less egregious things that I think our publishers have implemented. I didn't think it was the worst idea. And it was weird because it was in contrast to the fact that at that point in time, Sony was doing the thing where if you bought a game on PlayStation 3 that had a Vita version, that you got the Vita version at the same time, cross-buy. And that even went to PS4 for a lot of indies. Like if you bought, Titan Souls on Vita, you got it on PS4 and vice versa. But what I do wonder if that would have stuck around. I wonder if games as a service would have taken off in the same way, because I almost wonder if games as a service was a response of being like, okay, so if we can't make money off of people who want to play a game online and willing to pay us between it, then what if we make an online game in which the only way to play it is through downloading it and it's free, but if you want to get the best experience, you're going to continue to spend money with us. And it kind of like you said, it makes you wonder. It's almost like a butterfly effect thing. If one thing changed, where would gaming be now? But who knows? I mean, look, for as much as I give the gaming industry guff about games as a service being seemingly a little too prevalent, and I do harp on that a lot, and because I do believe that it's something I don't particularly want to see the games industry do. But at the same token, if I'm actually going to chastise anything in the industry right now, I'm going to chastise the fact that games are just ridiculously long and expensive for no apparent reason most of the time. There's 10 hours bare minimum in almost every game that I can kind of be like, I didn't need to be there. This is here because people are afraid of the 1886 effect, where if your game is 10 hours, you best hold your clutches because you're going to get a 0 out of 10, buddy. and word of mouth is going to dive into the ground and suddenly it's not going to work. You couple that with the fact that everybody wanted to be Skyrim with something. This is Skyrim with guns. Yeah. You kind of see how you get to where you are. It's interesting to see how the industry may have changed because, you know, arguably a lot of games and service stuff started beforehand, but games as a service, or at least Battle Royale, right, came from PUBG. And I wonder if Battle Royale would have seen the same light of day. You imagine so, because it was an Arma 3 mod. But
yeah, I would think so.
Maybe the big publishers wouldn't have gotten behind it.
Maybe. It's interesting. I don't know, man.
I don't know. Speaking of online games and sometimes the issues that come around with them, Sony has confirmed that Little Big Planet 3 has been taken offline after a lengthy shutdown for, quote, technical issues, stating that after difficulty fixing the issues, they've decided to end support for the game. As a result, user creations will be unavailable. This is what I hate about this. Little Big Planet 3, for a few of its down moments, Little Big Planet 2 is a great, 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 great game. Little Big Planet 3 is great. Little Big Planet 1 is great. But Little Big Planet 3 did one thing exceedingly well, and that is that it fully delivered on letting people make whatever they wanted to within that game, but have way more freedom than they had prior to that. You could do full-on RPG games. You could change where the camera was located. And a lot of that you could do, but it took a shitload of work and you were really limited. Now, ultimately, Dreams took this idea and expanded on it exceedingly so. But I have fond memories of creating with Little Big Planet. And while I know that eventually all things must come to an end, it's going to be kind of wild that I won't be able to log on to Little Big Planet, because Little Big Planet 2 has been down for a long time as well. I won't be able to log on to any Little Big Planet and see the things I made and published. I made an Uncharted series of like a movie in Little Big Planet 2 with my buddy, where we used the Bluetooth microphone that came with SOCOM Confrontation.
That's
and we
cool.
recorded voice lines for characters. So I was Drake, and we had this character named Ricardo, and we had a fully scripted thing where you're like, you know, Sackboy walked in wearing the Nathan Drake costume, and we had another dude worked up, and I show up, and then I had the voice recording line that would play, and then my buddy Jonathan had did the voice for Ricardo, and we were playing through, and we put it out, and no one, including myself, could ever go see that. Little Big Planet 1, I made an entire World War II game where it was a side-scroller World War II thing where you had to destroy tanks and airplanes and shoot them out of the sky, and it was super fun, and it's gone into the ether, unfortunately.
Sadly. RIP to that, man. That sounds cool, though. I wish I'd been more of a Little Big Planet guy. It was fun. I remember that was like the early trophy era. So I remember like really trying for those trophies as a kid. Didn't get them.
They're so hard too. It's so much work. I actually loathe the trophies for those games because they're so community driven.
They are. But I do really dig them, those games. So.
It's crazy that you've never played them. Look, you don't have a Vita anymore, right?
I do.
Oh, yeah, you do? What am I talking about?
Yeah.
Did you ever play Little Big Planet Vita?
I did not, no.
It is the best Little Big Planet game from a story perspective. Like the way that from a gameplay and story and everything coming together, they use that device so well, and it plays so well into the way that Little Big Planet games actually play. You should definitely give it a try. You cannot get the platinum anymore, but you should just give it a try for the sake of seeing a pretty wild game. but it really sucks that you didn't have the experiences that a lot of me and my friends had, because there was like nights where we would just be playing Little Big Planet 2 had a bunch of mini games that you could play on the planet. So around levels, you'd unlock mini games. And there was one that was basketball, and it was a flat level with a bounce pad on each side and a goal. And there was just a sponge ball that would bounce, and you'd have to grab onto it and then hit the bounce pad and try and angle yourself into hitting inside of the goal. And it was wild because like you could bounce and grab the other person to change their momentum to pull them away from it. You could do like flips with it and stuff. You could both grab the ball to try and keep more momentum going towards the ball. And I remember that being like peak online play, because you can match make with random people. We would be sitting in my room is now my daughter's room, with the TV on, sitting in the floor with headset on, crying, laughing with these other two guys that we match made with, just playing basketball for 4 hours. Flipping around and crying and laughing at all the different stuff that was happening. And dude,
sounds like us playing a way out.
Yeah, spending an hour and a half on a throwaway baseball game mechanic is one of the weirdest things I've ever done, and yet I had a fucking blast.
Dude, we were having so much fun. I would genuinely play that one section of that game again right now if you asked me to.
Yeah. The downside would be we'd have to get to it. Like, we should have made a save branch right there. Be like, we got this for future.
It's a good point.
I'm glad it wasn't only us, though, because as Chris and I tried figuring out who could hit the ball the furthest, because there was just this thing where you couldn't see the ball, but the ball could keep going, and it would measure in distance. And we started going on Reddit and seeing who else had decided to really push and see what the furthest score ever was. And I think Chris and I found one that was like one yard longer than what we had hit.
Yeah, the longest one we found was 1 yard longer than us.
Insane
killer.
But that's one of the things I love about gaming, is when you just find a way to make a game fun that was never the intended way.
Yeah,
like when you can get that out of a game, Little Big Planet feels like it's supposed to give you that. A Way Out feels like it's supposed to be a gritty two-player co-op game with very story driven and then we spend an hour and a half playing baseball. We also spend a few hours trying to beat each other and how many pull-ups we could do.
Yep, that's true. Great side missions, man.
great side missions. All right, moving on. The last thing we really have here, and we have a question that's kind of tied into this as well. Amazon's Fallout has been confirmed for a second season and is joined by the fact that Fallout 4 benefits from the same sales jump that Cyberpunk, The Last of Us, and other video game adaptations have caused with their respective series, with Fallout 4 jumping to number one in Europe game sales and probably pretty high in American ones. The show is excellent. I finally finished it. Chris hasn't quite finished it. It's so good, though. It does a lot of things, and it really uses... I don't think very many people are going to agree with me on this, and I don't particularly care, but I was talking to my buddy Donovan, and I feel like of the adaptations that have come so far, the two I've liked the most are Twisted Metal and Fallout. And the reason is that both of them are familiar and new all at the same time. Something about watching Fallout feels like everything you know about the world of Fallout, and it pays attention and is actually trying to do something within it, but it's new and I've never seen this story before at all. And these are characters that I don't know, but they feel familiar because they feel like they are at home in the world of Fallout games. Yeah. And I think Twisted Metal nails that too, where Twisted Metal is all new. None of that. I remember feeling like I didn't think you could even make a successful Twisted Metal show because how the hell do you do it? And they figured it out by doing something different, really playing into the tone that they had to play with and doing something unheard of and kind of different with the elements of a world they knew. So I've been very excited to see how this has turned around from a live action adaptation way, because Cyberpunk Edgerunners is excellent.
Yeah, absolutely. I love Fallout. I'm glad it's coming for our season two. We'll probably get the fifth Fallout season before the fifth Fallout game.
You think it'll actually go that long? I know it's kind of hard for you to say right now when you don't really know where the show completely ends at. You know something.
Yeah. I mean, I know what the ending is just as a Fallout fan. I bet I could say it and you'd be like, yeah, that's right. But I think my assumption is that if they keep going at a certain point, they'll just find another Vault Dweller, tell a different story. That's what I would do.
Yeah. That's definitely a way to approach it. It'd be curious to see if they can keep the quality that they have for that long. You know, yeah. It's kind of like Denis Villeneuve or whatever, whenever he's working on Dune, he's like, I have one more movie in me before I want to make other things. He's like, I want to see Paul's story through, but it's a long process and it takes a lot of time. And so I'm going to make this movie and then I want to go make other movies I want to make. It's like, okay. That's fair.
I mean, that's completely fair, but I'm going to be real with you. Once this Dune set of movies are, we don't need to see the rest. I don't know how into Dune you are, but I don't need to see anything that comes after Paul. I'm good.
Yeah, I want to see Dune Messiah for sure. Dune Part 2 is fucking incredible.
But I don't want to see the worm. I'm good.
Okay, fair enough, man.
If you know Dune, you know what I'm talking about. I don't want to see it. Yeah. I don't need to see it. Yeah. I don't need to see it.
I know enough about Dune.
Yeah, I don't need to see it.
That's all I need to know. Anyway, that's our last piece of news, but we do have a question that kind of coincides with it coming from one of our longtime listeners, longtime patrons, Mr. Rude Days 93. He says, with the Fallout success, so the Fallout series success, an Elder Scrolls live action could be in the cards. What would you have the plot be, and what would be some of the unique casting you would make? So the first thing I want to go through here, Chris, is we'll talk about the other two. How likely or how much do you think the success of Fallout indicates that there'd be an obvious through line to Elder Scrolls being successful as a live action, you know, adaptation?
I don't know. I think the biggest thing Fallout has going for it is overall it's wholly unique. And Skyrim would just be PG Game of Thrones. And I don't need that TV show.
It's funny that you brought up Game of Thrones because my immediate thought was that the problem I seem to have with fantasy right now is that if you are fantasy and you're on TV, there's almost like an expectation that you're going to Game of Thrones it. And I don't really want Game of Thrones because, don't get me wrong, Skyrim and the world of Tamriel actually has a lot of interesting political disrest. Like we were talking about the Thalmor embassy.
Right.
Last episode, if I recall correctly. And it's like, that's cool. And I would actually like to see that. But I have a feeling like if they even did Elder Scrolls, they would start with Skyrim, they'd start with a Dragonborn, and they'd try and tell a story, because that's the most accessible version of the show that is going to have the right type of thing that audiences would be attracted to. And I'd be really curious to see if they do any other ones, because I actually think the story of Morrowind is excellent, and that they could tell a story in Morrowind and have something interesting and unique and weird. But it also comes down to cost, because like Fallout's not that expensive to make, because it's a bunch of deserts, dilapidated buildings, and cars that are all based in reality. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot easier to pull off, whereas if you have a story in Skyrim, it's a bunch of trees and mountains and hills. You could pull that off. If you have a story in Morrowind, you have like blood moons and mushrooms and giant flea looking things that are called silt striders that take you to and from each province. And you're just kind of like, huh, or province rather. And you're just kind of like, yeah, okay, this is a lot more interesting, but this is probably a lot more expensive from an effects standpoint. I'd be curious to see how they do that. So Chris, first of all, do you consider yourself as big of an Elder Scrolls fan as you think you are a Fallout fan?
No.
I didn't think so, but I was curious. Yeah.
I like them, but it's more of a thing where all Bethesda games feel similar, so it feels the way I like, but the vibe of Fallout is just unmatched, and that's the whole thing for me.
Yeah, I mean, I quite like the Elder Scrolls, but you get into this thing where like a lot of Elder Scrolls is fueled specifically by D&D lore. Which is not a mm-hmm. problem. I mean, a lot of things are. That's just kind of the reality of D&D being so... It's permeated culture in a lot of various ways. To the point of where, like, you know, there's a lot of D&D inspiration if you look at something like Chronicles of Riddick and how crazy sci-fi it decided to get. It just decided to play into a bunch of stuff. But I am not immediately sure that the game that it would be a success. But let's kind of go through... Plot-wise, I think I've kind of landed on where I think that they would choose to go with it. Though, if they really wanted to be Game of Thrones style, I think they would go with Oblivion, actually.
I could see that.
And yeah, I think that because Oblivion...
and Hell.
Yeah, but those would be like your shock moments. You wouldn't do them often.
Look,
but you'd have a few of them to be like the few big vault scenes, you know?
True. Look, if I was going to make a Skyrim show, I wouldn't make a Skyrim show. I would make a Dark Brotherhood show or a Thieves Guild show or a College of Winterhold show, you know? Like,
well, see, that's the thing about those games. They're kind of meant to be like a smorgasbord of stuff, and they're great, but it's like the world of Skyrim has so many things going on, which so does Fallout, just to throw that out there. Fallout has the Brotherhood of Steel, which they talk about in this show. They have the Vault Dwellers, which they talk about in this show. They have the ghouls they talk about in the show. So they're doing a lot of things that you see in the other games. But I think Skyrim really pushes that to a much further thing. Skyrim's got way more factions than I think the Fallout games do. Side content, I think, is arguably more structured and has more variance in Skyrim than you see in even like Fallout 4. Fallout 4 has got a lot of side content, mm-hmm. but not all of it feels as faction driven.
True. I can agree with that.
So I don't know. How do you approach doing Skyrim? Because like you have the companions, mm-hmm. which you can tell a really cool werewolf story. Werebear, actually, but you know.
It depends.
Werewolf.
Yeah. Man, bear, pig. It depends what you're going for, because you could do exactly what I said, but the show is based about the Dragonborn, and hey, season one, he runs upon this kid who really wants his teacher killed, and oh, it's the Dark Brotherhood season, and then next season he steals something and Brynjolf walks up to him and goes, oi, would you steal that ring from that lizard man, you know? Like I think if you're doing Skyrim, you either don't follow the games, really.
Mm-hmm.
You follow one of the factions, or you do probably the most interesting thing, and you follow people dealing with the aftermath of the Dragonborn showing up and tell the story that way.
Yeah, but I think a lot of people would be like, why didn't I, people who didn't play the game, right, mm-hmm. who were coming into this thing that's new, and they'd be like, why didn't I get to see the Dragonborn fight with Parthenox and go into Valhalla? And there'd be all these things where people, this is what I, and I'm not belittling people's opinions, I understand it, but this is where I get into that thing sometimes where I'm like, I don't want to see the thing that the game already nailed just recreated in live action, because the game did that. I don't care, and I know that's different because it's difference of audience too, but I'm specifically talking about fans who have already played the game and then just want to see it recreated in live action. I'm like, but you've seen it, you've watched Parthenax fly you up, you've fought Alduin inside of Sovngarde, you've done all this stuff, you rode to the top of the Dragonshire and you went through and fought all the different dragon priests and whatnot. I think that game does a great job of giving you that spectacle. For me, and what I would personally like to see, like you, show me something after that. Show me something way before that. Show me the foundation. Show me how the Greybeards are formed.
Yeah.
Go into the lore of how. Fuck it. Show me about the first time Alduin was around. We got a little glimpse of that. All we got was a little bit of a flashback scene when you're looking and peering through the Elder Scroll, where you learn how you can defeat Alduin and see the rest of the prophecy or whatever. Show me that. Show me the battle that started in which humans had to slowly drive away the dragons and try and push Alduin back. That's cool. Season 2, show me how the Greybeards come from that.
Yeah. It's such an open world that there's so much interesting stuff you could do. For me, I think the biggest issue with Skyrim is just it doesn't have the vibes, man. Like, that's the thing with Fallout. Fallout has vibes. I don't give a fuck. Like, the ink spots, just the world the way it is, the handies. There's so many much vibes in Skyrim or Fallout. And I think the thing with Skyrim is you could very easily see if you told me Game of Thrones took place in Tamriel, I'd believe you. And I think that's the reason why it doesn't have the same level of vibe. Because I don't know, like, I don't think there's a single movie or TV show I've seen that looks like Fallout.
You know what gets so weird about it? I agree with you, but I also think that, well, I'm not going to act like futuristic things that are retro don't exist, but Fallout's unique spin on it that you don't see often in big stream media is the fact that it's future retro in a wasteland. So that's right. Kind of its shtick. But I agree with you in the sense that the problem that you would have in going with Skyrim is that the Skyrim world and story of the dragons is the most popular one. It's going to be the one that pulls you the most in terms of people wanting to see it. But it offers so much opportunity to be compared to Game of Thrones because Game of Thrones is very dragon heavy. And I think if I were creating this, Game of Thrones is awesome, but you don't want to be so close to Game of Thrones that you're getting comparisons in the sense where they can look at one and go, this one's obviously better than this one. And if you can't make something that's obviously better than the thing that you're so similar to, you probably shouldn't make it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're just gonna have a lot of people who are like, Game of Thrones already did this and they did it better. And so I would really lean into doing something that's different. And you can finally bring a dragon in with the whole Mehrunes Dagon thing that happens in Oblivion. But that can be way later in. And at first, what you're seeing is political unrest, but with these weird demon creatures outside. And those can be your little moments of like Fallout does with the rad roaches and the weird axolotl thing with, you know, I don't want to get too far into it. But, you know, that show revels in its weirdness, but just a little bit because it's trying to make sense budget-wise. It gives you enough to set the tone for you and kind of give you the world, terrify you a little bit. And then it's mm-hmm. like, okay, we got to be mindful of our budget.
Yeah. Main takeaway is that I don't really need a Skyrim show, but I'd probably watch it.
Yeah, I would definitely go the route of Oblivion. I think is the most, because it's still going to be cheap from a perspective of when you're just walking through Cyrodiil, it's just green forests. It's not that complicated to make. So I think I'd go that route. Casting wise, there's a part of me that would want Sean Bean, just because I think it's hilarious, and because if I'm not mistaken, Sean Bean was actually in Oblivion as
he's Martin.
He's Martin. Yeah. He's Martin Septim, whatever his name is. So that would be funny because he's in everything that's even remotely like that. He's in Lord of the Rings. He's in Game of Thrones.
But he always dies, which means he should be the guy.
Be the emperor.
No, he should be the guy who goes, ah, you're awake.
It's funny because that's, why can't I think of his name right now? He's Bring part of the Imperial
Rolf
War.
Or whatever? Rolf, right?
No, it's he's the guy who shouted the emperor down or whatever. Stormcloak? Ulfric Stormcloak?
Ulfric Stormcloak, yes.
Man, look at that. Digging out that Skyrim knowledge. No, I was actually going to say Sean Bean would make a great Brynjolf.
Yeah, he would. Who would play the jester guy? Do you remember who I'm talking about? In the Dark Brotherhood.
Wait, the one in the Dark Brotherhood?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a really good question. I wanted to say Bill Skarsgård because
I have a good answer. And I think you're going to laugh when I say it. So you're going Bill Skarsgård?
I think that's a pretty solid answer.
Okay, hear me out. I think I'm right here. It's Michael Cera.
I would totally be I'd totally be down with that. And my favorite thing about Michael Cera is he plays enough wild characters that skew so far from the way that you see him that you can see him as anything now.
Yeah. I could see him
like, dude, getting him in This Is the End when he's just railing lines of coke and then slaps Rihanna's asshole and then like being an asshole about his cell phone and getting stabbed through. I'm like, what the fuck is going on here?
I know, it's great stuff. So any other characters you want to cast in the Skyrim show before we move on?
Yeah, I'm trying to think through. I think Idris Elba as the guard who ends up meeting with you in Oblivion after the Emperor dies when he's the one down in the tunnels with you.
Yes.
If they're actually going to tell a story recreating Oblivion, this is the route I'm going. In my opinion...
Leader of the Blades, you're saying?
I'd be okay to say that. Yeah, he's one of the Blades. In my opinion, I would actually like to just see a storyline entirely of the Blades, but the Blades are in the Emperor's thing, so like it would definitely have to skirt around it, but that's just kind of the way it goes.
It would be kind of cool. It would be one of those things kind of like how Gotham ends, where it would be kind of cool if you follow one of the Blades and then it ends with you guys going into the prison. That would be a cool way to end the show.
That'd be kind of cool. Yeah, that would actually be interesting. That's the thing about those games, though, is like, right, anytime that you have a game where it's kind of like this chosen one setup, it gets complicated because it's like, well, that the story is so based around this idea of a chosen one. And Oblivion, both Oblivion and Skyrim do that really badly. I think that Morrowind is the best that you're just a random dude who got off of a prison boat on this continent. And you're free.
I'm not a chosen one fan.
Yeah. I am and I'm not. I understand how it plays into a lot of interesting ways to make a game feel like you can do whatever you want to in it. And it kind of makes sense as to why you can be a master at everything. But as you know from a lot of the games that I love, kind of like Greedfall, I like to be limited in certain areas because I think it feels more role-playing oriented. You know, it depends because sometimes there is like power fantasy. One of the things I really liked about Anthem is that there are times where Anthem just felt like a power fantasy. And it's like, cool, this feels sick. Definitely if you play Anthem on easy, because if you just want to go in for a power fantasy, hop in, drop the difficulty to easy, go do a mission and just fucking slaughter while you're flying around the air. Just, and you're like, I am the fucking man.
I am God. Hell yeah, brother.
Yeah. So that was a difficult question because I think a lot of the casting is going to come around to what do you choose to actually show? A lot of the times I just like the idea of what they did in the Fallout show where there are some touchstones of things that you are familiar with, but the rest of it's just a believable story set in that world. So, you know, I think it'd be cool to have a story that had somebody just interacting with a lot of the Daedric artifacts and having to deal with the Daedric gods coming down to them. That'd be pretty fun. I think that's a cool way to go about it. But I'm going to go ahead and say that I don't feel strongly that we're going to see the Elder Scrolls come through as a TV show, realistically.
I don't think so. I mean, Todd Howard kind of shut it down.
Oh, did he? Did he make a remark about it?
Yeah, he was asked about it. And I think what he said was basically, this happened organically and that hasn't happened organically.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We got a couple more questions and we're going to wrap the show up real quick. We have one from Josh Ayers. Says, question for Chris. Sorry, Brett. I know you're feeling on it. Should the PS5 have themes?
My answer is complicated because my answer is yes, but also I don't think I would use them because I think the PS5 UI is designed a very specific way that is not conducive to themes, which is why it does not have themes. But I know people want them, so I hope you get them. But I, given the design language of the PS5, I don't even see why people want them, really.
Just a holdover? Because I think what it really comes down to is the PS5 is in many ways the third, you know, variation, really the fourth, depending on how you want to look at it, but I'd say the third variation on the XMB.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a lot of people's favorite things about the XMB is themes. But yeah, that made sense when you had a system that took forever to load and it was really trying to be everything. Your smart TV does everything for you now. You're not usually going onto your PlayStation to watch Netflix. You're doing that by hitting a button on your TV. You're just interacting with your game system for games more often again than you were in that weird time period for the PS3 and the PS4. And all those had slow hard drives, so you weren't supposed to be on the, you were supposed to be on the screen for a while you're waiting for things to load and download and do all these things. But quality of life has kind of taken the need for, there was never a need for a theme, but there was opportunity for a theme.
Yeah.
And opportunity has been dwindled considerably, it feels like.
Well, to me, like, I look at the PS5 UI and I feel like the only time you'd ever see a theme is when you look at the like power button and the settings button, because it's showing your games and it's showing scenes from your games and all this kind of stuff. Where like the theme I used on PS4, I paid for it because I thought it was fucking hilarious, and it was a theme that every day it was a different picture of breakfast food. I thought it was fucking hilarious. So that's what I used. And I miss it. It was very funny, but like, I just don't see where it would fit, you know?
Yeah. Some of it is depending on who you are as a gamer too. I love themes and I would like to see them come around too, just because why not have the option? But I quite enjoyed being able to see all that when I felt like I had a little more time to spend on that. Because of my life, my own gaming habits, and the PlayStation 5 is being a much quicker console that gets you in and out of games and ease of switching between games that you've recently played with the Switcher and whatnot, I noticed that I don't see the main menu of the PlayStation 5 very often at all. Because most of the time, I'm playing a game, I put it in rest mode, I start it back up, I keep playing the game. I don't switch games very often, not nearly as much as you do. So you would have more opportunity to see it than I would, and that's still pretty low in reality. So that one's interesting. We got one more question, and then we're going to be out of here. Comes from another patron. Look at that, all the patron love today. Stingray X says, what has been your favorite convention to go to, gaming convention, I assume, if any, and where do you plan on going to next, if at all? Mine would be PSX. Nothing like spending time with fellow PlayStation fans. Good memories. Take care. Stingray, take care as well. Listen, PSX is definitely mine. Chris, I don't know if you ever got to go to any gaming conventions. I think you're located in a position where's PAX North in relation to you? Isn't it somewhat close to you?
PAX East is in Boston, which is about 2 hours
PAX away. East, that's what I meant. Yeah. That's not far. Yeah, I could see. So you could go and do that if you really wanted to.
I could, yeah. It never appealed to me because this is what you get for listening to a guy like Colin Moriarty, but it just sounded like a miserable experience. Not the being with people, but the waiting in lines and, you know, the COVID PAX plague. So it never really appealed to me, but I also never had people who wanted to go with me. So it was always a question of, do I want to go to PAX and not talk to anyone, or do I just want to not go to PAX? Now I think it would be a situation where if you messaged me out of the blue room and were like, hey, I'm thinking about going to PAX East, you want to go? I would go in a heartbeat. But
yeah,
for me by myself, I've just never had the opportunity or the means. Closest I came was I almost went to Sacred Symbols Live in New York. Like, that would have been the closest I would have come to it. So
no, for sure. I think I like conventions in theory, and a lot of that comes from the fact that I do like a lot of games that are not very known, and I have a penchant for playing games and enjoying games that are not as big on people's radar. And those conventions, definitely like PSX, had a lot of indie booths set up where you can just walk around and see people and play games. Like, I remember playing Celeste in a much earlier form than it ended up releasing in, and it looked very different, played quite a bit different, but I got to play it. No one else was at that table. I played Super Meat Boy Forever, or whatever that game that was, an infinite runner, played it, talked to the guys who made it, thought that was really interesting. I played Chasm at PSX. No wait. It's just a little roguelike that came out on Vita and PS4. Awesome game. Had a good time with it. And I liked that aspect of it, plus meeting up with people. But there is a difference, right? Both times I went to PSX, my buddy Blaze came with me. So you already have that immediate, like, okay, even if all I do is go and experience these things with one other person that I know, I'm good. But they also act as a slight social lubricant to kind of be like, okay, it's easier to talk to more people when there's already a group. We were already doing the podcast by that time as well. So I remember when we went to PSX, we had a couple of listeners who happened to be there and were like, hey, can we come see you and find you? And that was cool. And we were just kind of having fun with it. And I remember we brought a camera. We ended up not putting any of it out, but it was fun to kind of do. We brought a microphone that had a little logo of Triangle Square and the Nartek thing. And I'd brought some of the custom made cases I made. And I would stop random people and give them quizzes. And then if they got enough of the questions right, I'd give them one of the custom cases. So it was a fun time. And, you know, we were going to post those videos as kind of like social media stuff, but I'm horribly lazy when it comes to doing social media because I don't really do social media in my normal life. Okay. So I had a lot of great ideas. I didn't have the wherewithal to see it through. It's the problem I have with being in a band. I want to make the music and I love recording it and I like the songs. I don't want to promote. I hate doing it. But those were fun. And it's cool because, like, you know, Ryan, I was able to meet him in person whenever we went. That was fun. That was a great time. Nice.
That's awesome.
Yeah, go screw around, see him and John, you know, go hang out, eat dinner with a group of people after hanging. It was just cool. I met another person who ended up becoming a listener while we were eating breakfast at a Carl's Jr. there. And we were ended up talking and I was like, hey man, I don't know if you're interested, but I do a podcast every week. And he ended up becoming a listener and being a patron for a long while and stuff. And Nick, I hope you're still doing well. I just thought that was cool. It's one of those weird things where it is a good environment because one of the things about being in a convention, definitely something that's so specific to be PlayStation, is you kind of know you automatically have something in common with everyone there. Nice. And it's a little more scaled down. Because like PAX, you're a gamer and you have that in common with them, but what if it's a majority of people who play on PC? You know, there's a bigger potential rift between you and the other people. Chris, now that you've been doing the show, I mean, if there was going to be a convention that you'd be likely to go to, I thought about going to PAX. Would PAX East be something you'd be interested in actually messing around with?
Absolutely. I would love to go. It would just be more of like, I don't want to go by myself.
Yeah, for sure. Well, how about this? Next time that PAX East comes around, let's try and keep an eye on it and see if we can plan to go.
Hell yeah. I'm down with that.
Bet. All right, cool. Well, there you go, Stingray. I appreciate the question, but I think that brings this episode to an end, and I'm going to get off of here and go snuggle up to my wife before bedtime, which sounds like a great time. So, Chris, as always, thank you for joining me. Is there anything you'd like to leave these people with parting word-wise?
Vampire Survivors is coming to PS5 this summer.
Vampire Survivors is coming to PS5 this summer. So one thing that we always do is we always shout out our patrons. But before we get to doing that, if you want to interact with us in any capacity, remember you can find us in the Discord by clicking the link in the description below, whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on podcast services. You can hop in there, talk to us day in, day out, as well as a lot of our other listeners about what games you're playing, what music you listen to, what movies you're liking. You can hop in and there's a section for you to talk about anything we've talked about on the podcast and chime in with your opinion. There's a spot where we do a call to action for questions and topics you may want us to talk about. Hop in there. But if Discord's not your bag and maybe Twitter is, you can head over to Twitter @TriangleSQRD. Follow us on there. And hopefully keep up to date with what we're doing on the show as often as I can bring myself to actually promote like I'm trying to do right now. If you know anybody who you think would like the show after listening to it, please feel free to share it with them. We'd love to have any new voices we can come in. Thanks to everyone who did reach out and give us questions for this week. And next week, we'll be coming back around with episode 350. I want to talk to Saul, see if I can get him to hop on even for just a small stint, kind of give you guys a actual Saul moment, catch up with him. But with that said, Chris, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Step Bro.
What are you going to get off here and go play?
Microsoft Word.
There we go. The age old 470 hours Microsoft Word playtime.
Oh yeah, brother.
Hey, that's the only way, Chris. You got to grind for it. But without further ado, we'd like to thank our patrons who go over to patreon.com/Nartech, just like you can, and give as little as a dollar per month to help support the show directly so that we don't have to dip into our own pockets. That'd be covering the cost of hosting the show, buying gear, or who knows, maybe flying out to PAX East. With all those things in mind, we like to shout out every one of our patrons as a way to thank them for making the show possible. And with that, we start with Da Overlord, Spencer, Brandon Edwards, Alex, Barry Rogers, Stingray X, Matt Tubbs, Easton328, Aztec King, Leechion69, The Lord Corgi, Bailey Robertson, Mark Schutz, Cypher Primus, Kyle Grimm, Rude Days 93, Kevin Bacon Bits, Danny Villalobos, Jehudi MD, No Fate, Josh Ayers, Derek Porter, Donovan Williams, Matthew Green, and Sean Santarude. Thanks to each and every one of you. We'll see you next week.